Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for coming by. 503-733-2970. 503, well, let's see if I can actually do that. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Coming up later on, CNN radio correspondent James Roop will be joining us. He will feign interest in the Oscars for a legally mandated period of time, and then we'll just go back to talking about Britney Spears, because that's what we do here. What else do we have? We have the top five coming up, I believe. I'm going to try to get to that. And we have Scotty J with the suburban perspective as well. Ladies and gentlemen, now see, I'm not going to be able to cue it to the hook, though. Damn me, I hate me. I hate me with everything in me. Let's...
We can do a little bit of it.
This was Sarah's suggestion. We can make this a recurring segment if it goes well. Out of you. Ooh, are these sugar wafers for me?
They are. I only allowed myself to eat half of them.
Fantastic.
So they can watch
all the things you do. Because the drugs never work. They're gonna give you a smirk. Cause they got methods of keeping you clean. They're gonna rip up your head. Your aspirations to spread. Another cock is a murder machine. They said I'm
thing. Every time I hear this song, I think about Chris's Nutcase Kid.
Another one?
Yeah, you know who I'm talking about.
I know you're talking about.
I'm not alone there either. Joni said the same thing. And we say that with love. We love Chris. And I understand that being a parent is difficult. I'm just saying that kid ought to be kept in a steamer trunk for like the next 8-9 years. And you know it's true. Welcome to the Rick Emerson Show. This will be your new theme. Susan Reynolds, CBS Radio Portland Marketing Guru. Hi, Susan. How you doing?
I'm okay. Thank you.
Yes. Okay. Your daughter's not even a teenager yet.
Well, she's rehearsing in a big way.
Fantastic. How old, if I can ask, is she 12?
Yeah, she's 12, and she'll be 13 this summer, so I'm right there.
See, and I was already a little bastard before I ever reached my teenage years. I was already just a cretin. I mean, I am the reason that I will not have kids. Well, one of many reasons, but I am one of the huge reasons.
We were discussing that in the hallway. I'm like, I know how terrible I was to my mother. I would just be punished 10 times over.
If my mom were to call me right now, I try not to answer the phone when my mom calls, but if I answered the phone.
Rick.
No, because here's the thing. No, and I don't. The thing about it is, whenever I talk to my mom, even now, I mean, I'm a grown man, I'm 34, I've been out of the house for over 16 years. I try, and I mean this with love, I try not to talk to my mom because it's impossible to talk to my mom without just feeling an overwhelming sense of guilt for no readily apparent reason. Like, my mom could just call, she called me the other day just to ask a question about her TiVo. And I immediately, I see on my cell phone, mom calling, and immediately, just, I'm such a terrible son. If my mom called right now and just asked, to come to the studio and just kick me in the sack repeatedly, like, I would just have to let her do it because I was just such a hooligan. And I mean, it wasn't like I got arrested or anything, or like I was off playing with zip guns or whatever the kids used to do. I was just an obnoxious little ass. I mean, I was just a little bastard is what I was. So... anyway, I don't even remember how we got onto the subject the other day, but we were walking around, we were doing something, and we got into this discussion of, it was some phrase that kids use or that teenagers, do you know what the phrase was, Susan?
It was good looking out, because I was saying that I heard Randy Jackson say it on American Idol, and I had no idea what it meant.
What is it?
Good looking out.
Good looking out.
Can you use it in context?
He would say it to contestants who were auditioning and then didn't make it. In other words, that was sort of like his bye-bye now kind of thing. And so I did, but it didn't make sense to me. I mean, I couldn't even put it together. So
could we be more lame?
Yeah, and I felt pretty lame. So then I went on UrbanDictionary.com.
Because that'll make you less lame.
Well, and I
look this up on the internet.
Yeah, and so I did, and it says, "Hey, good looking out, man. That's a way to say thank you to someone." usually if they were looking out for you. Which that part doesn't make sense, but that's what it means.
We're such retards. All right.
And, you know, Randy Jackson, I'm the cutting edge.
Does your child, let me ask you this right now. Does your kid use phrases you don't understand? Does she say things? Does she use words? Or you're just like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, and then when I try to, you know.
No.
And you shouldn't do this.
You don't try and say it
no,
back.
No, please.
Tell me you talk in your kid's lingo.
No. Because I read these books and they say, don't do that because
good.
That's like the worst thing you can do. But I do try to get to what it means, you know. So, like, if she says something I don't understand, I'll say, what are you talking about?
See, but you can't say that. You tip your hand then. Then the kid knows that you know that you don't know.
They already read Urban Dictionary before you asked your daughter what
well,
she
well, you know, they already think I'm the lamest thing on the planet anyway. Yeah. So, you know, I got that going for me.
Well, there is this sort of bell curve that happens. Oh, and Mailman Chris is on the phone.
Of course he is.
Fantastic. Mailman Chris is on the phone. We'll talk to him in a second. But there is this sort of bell curve where when you're kids are a certain age, like 8 or 9, that they're just proud of you no matter what you do, and then instantly, bam, mortified of you no matter what you do.
Right, and, you know, I always thought that I would be, you know, kind of a cool parent, a hip parent. Well,
you're a pretty hip lady.
You kind of have to go into it thinking that way, otherwise they will just chew you up and spit you out. And I always said, I'm not going to be my mom, you know, I'm not. And then you start saying things and you're hearing your own mom's voice coming out of your mouth. And it's like, you can't stop it. You want to stuff the words back in, you can't.
So what is it? What have you said as a parent that you never thought you would say?
Because I said so.
Oh,
sorry. But
because I'm your mother. That's why.
I mean, I will tell you, there was one time where there was a lot of door slamming going on, like stomping up the stairs, slamming the door. And so I said, listen, you slam that door one more time, and I am taking it off the hinges. Now, there's nothing worse for a preteen girl than to not have a door to her room, right?
My parents took my door off the hinges.
Yeah,
one.
She slammed the door again, and so I thought, oh, crap, now I actually have to
do it
because I don't know how to take a door off the hinges. My husband was out of town. I'm like, I got the tools. I pulled the door off the hinges, and it was heavy. like I almost fell down the stairs, but I got that door off. She never slammed the door again. So I thought, you know, there's one for the win column for me.
Fantastic.
And I don't think I've won one since, but that was a good one.
Girl, what you be tripping for? Be easy. That's slang for calm down and relax.
I'm sorry.
Please
what
don't
is,
ever.
Tim is the only.
Tim can pull it off, but I thought
Tim
you were
the only person
right?
allowed to do it.
Girl, what you be tripping for? Be easy.
That is fantastic.
It really is genius. My mom's threat was when she buckled up, by the way. This is a battle of wills that Rick Emerson won. My mom, because I'm just a pig, I'm a slovenly bastard, and my mom's thing was, because my mom is a neat freak, she's an obsessive compulsive house cleaner. My mom's trait is, you would be drinking out of a glass. You would set it down to use the bathroom. You would come back. The glass would be washed, dried, and put away by the time you came back from the bed. And I look back now, and I didn't really appreciate that at the time. At the time, everything your parents do is embarrassing. Doesn't matter how great it is, really. You know what I mean? The fact that my mom was so bent on keeping a great house. You know, as soon as you go to somebody's house that's just a pigsty, that you appreciate that. But I just wouldn't clean my bedroom. And so my mom had this whole thing of like, well, fine, I'm not going to clean. If you're not going to help me out, I'm not going to clean it. You can just live in a pigsty for all I get. And so I just didn't care. And so I was just like, fine. And she finally gave in after like 4 weeks of me not cleaning my room. And of course, you know, a teenage boy, when it is like the only time when you could do this and just not feel bad, I didn't change my bed clothes for like a month, and you know, and just, and she finally just buckled. She couldn't take it anymore. But let's see. I don't have another sounder handy. Chris, hello, sir.
Hello.
Hi, how can I help you?
Well, you know, there's only 19 years difference between me and my son. So he listens to the same music I listen to. A lot of times I buy the CDs first,
mm-hmm.
and then he absconds them from me. You know, play video games with them. So in that respect, I am kind of that cool dad. Unfortunately, I think that's what drives him over the edge.
Is it? Well, see, because and you're like covered in Star Wars tattoos and, you know, and whatever. So it's just, I don't know. I think anytime you're, see, you probably don't have to try at it. Anytime you're trying to be a cool parent, that's when it's not going to work.
Yeah.
That's
and,
when it's
you know,
doomed.
And being, you know, mean and unduly cruel to him, It doesn't do any good. It just pushes them away further.
Oh, no, that's the thing. No, because if you're cruel, and you got a bad cell phone there, so we're going to have to, like, I don't know, see if you can get into a better cell area. No, and if you totally, like, bring the whip down in your kids, then they just become martyrs. That was my whole thing, too. And I'm just at that right age where I grew up. I was part of that first generation where it wasn't necessarily accepted that you could whack your kids around. So I was, you know, where my parents would my parents would go to get like a yardstick or something to whack me with. And I was, I'll call the police on you. That's what I'll do. I totally was right at that age.
Oh, they say that. I mean, they know that I'm not going to hit them, but they say stuff like that. Or why do you hate me so much? You know, things like that. It's horrible because, you know, and girls are very different than boys. You know, girls are really sweet and lovable, and then they get to about this stage right here, and then the eye rolling and all the back talking and all this other stuff starts. And you can't, you know, like I try to talk to other moms, you know, and that's why I find myself standing in the aisle of the bookstore, you know, in front of the parenting books.
Now, are you just filled with self-loathing when you're buying a parenting book? What is the name of that book?
It's called Get Out of My Life, But First Could You Drive Me and Cheryl to the Mall? Which I thought was just
the
greatest name.
Best title ever.
But as you're buying that, do you want to buy it like wearing a trench coat and like sunglasses and just sort of hanging your head in shame? Like,
no.
Here I am buying a parenting book.
No, not at all. Because I figure, you know what? I cannot do this on my own. I can't. I'm ill-equipped. And even though, you know, I think I was a, you know, kind of a, I don't want to say I was a problem child, but I do know that when I tell my mom about things that are happening now, she just laughs. She just thinks it's hysterical.
Are you terrified by the things that you did? Do you do this? Do you mentally compare yourself? Do you mentally compare your daughter at every age she is with what you were doing at that age?
Well, particularly now, because I know this is where it starts to get rough. And I know some of the things I did, and I can spot all the signs, and I'll know as soon as, well, I don't want to say.
So you're waiting for the sneaking out and the drinking and
all that.
Thanks,
stuff.
Sarah.
Yeah, thank
Sarah,
you.
You missed this during the break. Here's what happened during the break.
I'm sorry.
And so Sarah is talking to, and Sarah has a very plain-spoken way about her sometimes. So Susan comes in, and we were talking about this whole thing of not understanding what the hell your kids are talking about and whatever. And Susan's like, so are you waiting for the smoking and the drinking and the drug taking and the cutting school and the losing of the virginity? And it's just so
I said that, no, I did them in sequence because I'm like, I didn't say drinking and smoking. I said, you know, the boyfriends and getting the driver's license, and then eventually someday way along
like
down the
30,
road,
age
when
30.
She's married.
Yeah.
After you're long after you're dead.
Right.
You know.
I won't care.
You don't have to be around.
Yeah.
And so forth. Ugh, yeah.
I know. It's a lot scarier now than it was, you know, when I was coming up,
well,
I think.
Everybody sugarcoat it, but I mean, that's realistic. I mean, that's what kids are doing.
See, everybody says that, though, and I don't know if that's true. That's that whole, when I was a kid, and I always wonder if that's real. I don't know. I don't pretend to know. But everybody is convinced that there was, like, this golden era, like, 15 years ago, when children didn't do whatever. And I wonder if that's...
They did do. It's just that I think the things they did weren't as strong as the things that are available to them now.
I certainly remember.
I had a pretty wild. Like, it just depends on who you hang out with, because there are bad kids in any town.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
Like,
and there are parents who will look the other way while you steal your friend's grandparents' mini bottles and get completely.
Yeah, and
really?
This is the other thing.
I worked with some kids who went to public schools.
What's that?
I worked with some kids who went to public schools.
Yeah, well, no, it's... I will say this, that every high school... I mean, when I was growing up, which is... I mean, I was in this high school 20 years ago, and there were still... You know, there's always the kid in your class that sells you weed, and there's always the kid, the girl in class that does the whole football team.
Right.
And whatever. And I don't think that, I don't know that changes.
Well, the thing is, too, that they, you know, there's all these different parenting styles. And, you know, some of my kids' friends have parents that really don't provide a lot of supervision. So I don't know what happens when they get over to their house, you know, and it's a little scary sometimes. You know, you sort of want to protect them. On the other hand, you want to let them, you know, do their thing and be independent. And it is just, it's pretty terrifying. And so, you know, you do the best you can. So, yes, I have to read some books.
All right. So we have to, let's see. We've got, this. Well, okay, a lot of people are weighing in on the good looking out thing. So apparently that is apparently that's correct. So I have a checklist here. Things. Okay, so your daughter, MySpace page.
Well, okay. Here's the other thing. Yes.
Wait, but, does she know the show exists?
Isn't she in school right about now?
Well, I hope
as far as you know, she's in a bowling alley buying weed off some guy named Chico.
Oh God. Well, let's put it this way: the school hasn't called yet today, so as far as I know, she's there.
Yeah.
So she's not listening at the moment. She had a MySpace page. She had instant messaging. She had a cell phone and an iPod. All of those things are now taken away.
As punishment?
Uh-oh, what happened?
Well, we had some situations with perhaps being less than truthful.
I'm 19. My name is Amber.
Exactly.
My friend's little sister is on there, and it says that she's 20.
Yeah. Well, when I discovered that my daughter had one, it said she was 19, and I said, oh, my God.
Oh, Jesus, I was just guessing.
No. And
I really haven't been visiting your daughter's MySpace page.
Oh, God. Oh, creepy. Anyway, so, you know, there were some things that happened, and then grades were starting to suffer. And the instant messaging thing is one of those things that just is a vacuum of time. They will sit there for hours, and they're supposed to be working on schoolwork and what have you, and they're not. So I took it all away, and I took away the cell phone and the iPod just to make a statement. And I know, but you know what? It sort of helped, and she's actually living life without a cell phone. And the cell phone was really there so she could be in touch with me. You know, I'm a working mom, and it's, you know how it is. Well, maybe you don't.
No.
But anyway, I found that all she was doing was text messaging, you know, all her pals. So all that stuff is hidden away. In a special hiding place.
Good God. As I was saying earlier, if I had a kid, man, I would just put them in some sort of a dungeon with a moat around it, and they would never have contact with anybody ever.
Seriously, I have even thought to myself, okay, military academy, and what am I saying? This is crazy. But you get to that point, they push you to the point where you just think, I cannot do this. I'm going to go get my own apartment.
That's the other thing, is I know that I have a bad impulse control, and the first time my kid looked at me slantways and mouthed off, that it's just the thing about Mr. Hand becoming Mr. Fist, and I have a friend of mine. There's a guy I know, and I was over at his house one time, and he has a son, and I said, hey, where's so and so? And he's like, he had to go away for two nights. And I said, what's that about? He said because I realized, and the kid is only like seven.
Oh.
The kid's already like a button pusher at like seven, and he said they're going back and forth, and he said he had that moment where he realized that, like, more than anything on earth, he just wanted to whack his kid, like, in the bridge of, like, right across the nose. And he's like, I had to put him on, you know, in the car and send him to my grandparents for two nights because, he said, I realized that I just wanted to pummel him. And I said, it's probably just as well that you realize that.
It's hard. I mean, there's no question. And the business with the girls, you know, they can make one mistake that'll change their entire life.
Oh, yeah.
And the thing is, I would so much rather have a boy. You couldn't pay me enough to have a teenage girl. There's no way. There's no way on earth. Because teenage boys are irresponsible, but the thing is, they're also stupid. And so it's like having a disobedient cat versus a disobedient dog. You know what I mean? Disobedient dog will misbehave in a couple of really predictable, really known, sort of finite ways. And then you kind of punish them a little bit. You whack them around sort of figuratively. And then they're fine. Whereas cats are sneaky. Cats will take something and they'll hide it and destroy it. And they'll bury it under the couch. And you won't realize it until it starts rotting 6 months from now. You know, and the whole house smells like a rendering plant. That's what it is with girls. Boys are just dumb. And they'll just get drunk. And they'll wreck the car. Whereas girls, man, they're really sneaky.
And they get mean, too. Like, they get into this middle school thing, and Sarah and I were talking about that movie Mean Girls. It's not so far off. I mean, they get nasty, and they're best friends one day, and then they're terrible enemies and saying all this horrible stuff about each other the next. And, you know,
It's like eighth and ninth grade were like the worst years of my entire life.
Cause I had that to look forward to.
Oh, yeah. It was pretty bad. Maybe it's different now. Maybe it's younger because they're all acting older.
I think at some point, we'll look into this. I think at some point we'll bring you back occasionally and we'll give you bring you up to speed on the lingo the kids are using.
Oh, thank you.
So you can know exactly, what your daughter's talking about.
Yeah, because I think, the main thing right now is that I just embarrass them every time. I mean, I don't even have to do anything and I'm embarrassing them. Yeah.
Just being there is enough. Let me just tell you this, and I will just implore you not to do this one thing that my dad did growing up. And I can't remember if it was, anything that takes place at a Sizzler is bad to begin with. I'm pretty sure it was a Sizzler. In retrospect, it may have been It may have been somewhere else, but it was like a Sizzler type place, like clearly like a trashy, like low rent, like, you know, it's like some ghetto place where we were eating dinner. And my dad, who always just fancied himself as being like smarter and better than he was, we're sitting there at dinner, and I'm like 12 years old, just at that age where everything your parents do is just a living, breathing, hellish mortification to you. And then my dad clearly doing, and it's like he orders a bottle of like $4 wine or whatever it is at this like it's like this low rent steakhouse that we're at, and then he does the long, drawn out, exotic like swirling of the wine in the glass, and then he does the whole
why that's quite a nose on this Boone's Farm apple wine that I purchased, or whatever.
Oh,
whatever the hell it is. He says really loudly, and I'll never forget, it embarrasses me not even to tell the story, my dad doing the long three-stage, like sniffing the cork, or what, and we're like at a goddamn Sizzler, and he's saying it in a really loud voice, so the voice carries, because he wants everybody at, like, the Bob's Steakhouse to know exactly how well-versed he is in the vineyards of the world, or Kennewick. So there you go. So don't do that.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, you know, I don't know what to do. I'm sort of, you know, I guess I'll just buy another book.
Well, before we go, let's have one final.
Do you know anybody who has
teenagers? There is someone who might be able to help you. Someone we know who's raised teenagers. Mm-hmm. Sarah, can you turn my computer up, please?
Of course.
There is somebody who might be able to help you, who has experience.
Scotty J, this is David Cassidy. Okay. I don't know what else to say. Except
experience raising young people.
I am in trouble.
Scotty, please summon him to the studio.
Beam us up, Scotty.
End of message.
Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, our PA, Scotty J.
Well, hello, Scotty.
Good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
All right. You have young people living in your house. So how old are your kids?
My daughter will be 13 in August.
Oh, they're pretty close.
It doesn't even seem possible. Well, it just seems like it ought to be illegal, actually.
Do any of these books look familiar?
It looks like some good reading.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, thoughts. So you have a teenage girl. So thoughts on the dealing with teenage girls, Scotty J?
I can relate a little bit. Yesterday I got a cell phone. Don't know if you knew that, but my daughter had lost hers about a month ago, a brand new expensive sliver, I guess is what they call it. And so I made her go all this time, about a month or so, without a cell phone. And I made her do a ton of chores around the house until she could get enough money to get another cell phone.
Oh, you're the whole, you'll treat it nicer if you have to work for the money to whatever. Yeah.
Right. And so what I did is I got a new cell phone yesterday, gave her my old one, yet still made her pay for it with her. So I got some free work.
Now, who does the disciplining in your house? Is it you or is it Mrs. J?
Kind of a combo deal.
Depends. But who more so? Because it's usually a bigger one.
It depends on who's there. Here's how it goes. Mrs. J will yell at him, to a point where...
Then I bring up the chain.
Right, right. And so I'll put up with it because I'm kind of like the last...
The last line of defense.
Yeah, yes.
I'm the last straw.
Now, does she actually say, wait till your father gets home?
I don't know if she actually says that because I...
You're always home first.
I wouldn't be there.
You're only there for four hours a day.
Right. No, I don't know if she says that or not, but I do know that, and the kids know that I'll only put up with so much, and so if they hear me coming up the stairs, if she's yelling at them upstairs or something for, you know, messing up their room or whatever it may be, if I have to come up there, I mean, all hell breaks loose.
No more TV in the shower.
All I have to do is, seriously... take
the thread count in your sheets is going to go down, kids.
Well, I do know that the parents have to kind of stick together. You know, the worst thing that can happen is if you're in the middle of disciplining, the other spouse comes in and says, oh, wait a minute, that wasn't so bad.
Yeah.
It's all off then.
Oh, my parents did that constantly. Yeah. My parents just left it wide open, the divide and conquer strategy.
Yeah, we went through that in the beginning of our relationship when we first had our kids, and... we learned very quickly that we both have to be on the same page.
No, children are mean. They're mean and manipulative. They're evil.
Yeah,
it's true.
I'll say, it used to be like this. I'd say one thing, no, and then when I'm not around or I'm outside.
That's a yes!
Yeah. Or they go to say,
exactly.
Yeah.
No, it's the oldest trick. And it's funny how kids just instinctively know how to manipulate and lie.
Right. They were not taught that. They just learned it.
No, kids, that's what people say, that the human beings are good by nature, and that's completely untrue, because children just by default, they know how to lie and manipulate. All right. Well, we're way over time. We got to break. So, Susan, so thank you for coming in. At some, we'll probably bring you back at some point here so we can update you on what the young people are doing.
Okay, and this has been therapeutic, so thank you.
Well, Cena, you know you're not alone.
No,
Scotty J understands.
Oh, well.
You can always... We'll give you
Susan, and if you want, I can give you some tips as to how I got around my parents so that we can know what to look for with your daughter.
That's a great idea.
Oh, that is...
That's a fantastic idea.
That's terrible.
I think you could start a business based on that.
That's a fantastic idea.
I had the super strict parents, so I had to learn how to work around it, and I did, so I can tell you.
Oh, boy, we will be talking.
Is this when you replaced the liquor with the water that was there, the substance that was the same color?
Yes, there were many.
Oh, well, I did that, too.
Fantastic. Yeah. It's just the whole premise of sneaking out and having to coordinate, you know, where you're actually staying with where your parents think you're staying.
Oh, I know that.
You say that I'm at your house. I'll say that I'm at, you know.
And yeah. When you call, they're in the bathroom.
Totally.
Yeah.
Oh, I did that, too.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay, that's fantastic. I'm going to write that down for a future program. All right. Fantastic. All right. Susan Reynolds, all right, thank you. So we will have you back at some point in the near future to talk about this. Are we going to do Jim here, and then we'll break? All right. Thank you, Susan. Susan Reynolds, ladies and gentlemen, CBS Radio Portland, the marketing guru. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Radio Program from Los Angeles, CNN Radio correspondent Jim Roop. Hello, Jim.
Hey, do you want to take a break? That's fine with me. I can sit through.
You want to do that?
Whatever makes your sponsors happy.
Sarah, why don't we just break here?
Okay.
And we'll come back.
You guys have to be pushed against it, you know.
God bless you, Jim. God bless you for being considerate of our clock.
Dude, I understand the business.
All right, a break here. We'll come back with Jim Roop. We'll talk a little bit of Oscars. All right. Thank you, my friend.
You bet.
Speak to you in just a second. Hang tight. There's Jim Roop. We come back. Your phone calls as well. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Don't go anywhere. Radio program. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Coming up later on, Peter Carlin from the Oregonian. More of your calls, etc. Like us at 3, Donna Mike at 7. Let's welcome now from Los Angeles, CNN Radio correspondent James Roop. Hello, sir.
Good afternoon, sir.
How are you, brother?
I'm doing well, thank you.
How late, when you go to the Academy Awards, how late are you stuck there?
I got home about 12:30.
Okay, that's not so bad. What time did you get there?
11 a.m.
Left? Jesus, are you kidding me?
No, I'm not.
That's a 14-hour day.
And then I'm up at 2:30 a.m. for East Coast Live Shots.
Lucky you. So it's kind of your best day ever.
Well, every award show's like that, though.
Yeah,
I know. I don't sleep.
Yeah, is that me? Is that your food that you just brought in?
It is. It's really good. Sorry.
You smelling yourself, Seth? I smell like an enchilada.
No, I was just like, that's an odd smell. Is that me?
It's this brown rice vegetable tofu.
All right. Well, as long as it's not me, it's all I care about.
It might be you.
So the Oscars last night, so everybody kind of knew it was going to be the Scorsese thing. I mean, they can claim, this is the thing that I'm confused about, because they claim every year that it's just these two knuckleheads from Pricewaterhouse, that they're the only two people on planet Earth who know the results.
Apple.
Right, exactly. And as I've been saying, and I think a lot of people said, as soon as they announced that it was going to be Spielberg, Coppola, and Lucas giving the director's award, yeah, you totally knew who it was going to be.
Yeah.
Because Scorsese is the only other living director that would fit into that group. Probably. So, I mean, you kind of knew that. So, I mean, it did seem like the jig was sort of up. And Scorsese himself said that when they walked out on stage, they looked right at him and smiled.
He knew something was up. He admitted it.
Yeah, so...
Something was up. I knew something was up. Yeah. It's overwhelming. Jeez, man.
No, he is kind of a tweaked-up minor bird.
I like him.
No, I like him, but, man, he's got the big eyebrows and a whole lot of twitching.
You can't get past those things.
No, a lot of twitching going on. So, anyway. So, I don't know. So I don't know that there was much in the way. I mean, was there anything last night that was not just expected?
Alan Arkin's win, I think. Everyone was thinking Eddie Murphy. The problem is, you're better off, if you like the Oscars, if that's your big show, don't watch any other award show.
Right.
Because you start to think, oh, well, he's cleaned up all of this, you know, every award show he's won the supporting actor honor, so he's got to get it for the Oscar. And then Alan Arkin wins, and you go, oh, what a surprise. Well, that takes away from Alan Arkin's win.
I suppose.
You know, I mean, that's a terrible thing. I hate when people say, hey, that was a surprise that Arkin won. Arkin's going, why is that a surprise? I was nominated. I was good.
Yeah, totally.
Screw you.
Yeah, because the implication is that he's a tool and sucks.
Yeah, exactly.
And
Eddie Murphy deserved it.
Therefore, he's stunningly undeserving. Alan Arkin wins an Oscar last night. I haven't seen Little Miss Sunshine. The only person in the world, I know, everybody in the world has seen it but me. I rented it, and it's been like sitting on top of my TV for like a year now. I'm the last guy in the Western.
You're gonna owe some fees there, pal.
Yeah, I know. I got the last guy in the Western Hemisphere that I haven't seen it. So I'm gonna do that. But the Departed kind of cleaned up, and so now of course, today was already talking about doing a prequel or a sequel or whatever.
Well, the Departed was my favorite movie. Out of all those movies that were nominated, right. I really liked The Departed. Last week I rushed to watch all of them, but I really liked The Departed. That's one you can see at least twice. Because after you see it the first time, what you know on the first one, you watch it the second time and go, I see how that developed, like The Sixth Sense or something like that.
Well, it's like all of those huge ensemble pieces Scorsese does. There's so many layers to it.
Yeah.
And whatever. So
it was very good.
And was anybody visibly drunk or obnoxious last night?
No, it was terribly boring the entire night.
I see, and I got to tell you right now, we were saying this earlier, I did not watch the Oscars, and the reason that I didn't watch is I've learned now, with every passing year, that technology just makes it pointless because as soon as it's over, I can get the list of who won on Yahoo, and then I can see all of the highlights on YouTube, you know?
Yeah, you didn't miss a thing. I mean, you really didn't.
Do the Oscars, let me ask you this, do the Oscars really matter anymore?
Mm.
I mean, the way that they used to?
No way near the way that they used to. Because there really aren't any stars anymore. There's so many film studios. I mean, it used to be four studios,
yeah.
If you wanted to count Fox. And they would make these blockbuster movies. Everyone would make one epic a year, hoping that would be the best picture.
Right.
And then a bunch of little ones to give their talent, because they got them all on contract and they're paying them, something to do. And the better performances won out. Now, there's so many, especially independent film companies, so many actors, I don't want to call them all stars, so many actors, that it dilutes the process. You know, it's like you can't find any great major league pitchers anymore to pitch past an aluminum bat because there's boatloads of teams now.
Right.
You know, it's the same thing.
So the, I don't know.
No, they don't mean a damn thing.
Well, and plus there's the Golden Globes and just there's so many. Yes. And as you said, it becomes much more of a, with every award show that goes by, you try to predict, you know, because they're all precursors.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
All right.
It was excruciatingly boring last night. It was just a bad
show. Look, even Ellen DeGeneres, who I do like, I do find her funny. But what makes her funny to me is the same thing that makes her a bad Oscar host in my opinion, is that she's just kind of innocuous, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
She's just sort of bland, and you know, which I guess is fine. I guess that makes her kind of a, you know, comedy for all occasions.
But you know, I started pining about halfway through, 2 hours into this thing, I'm going, oh my God, give me Billy Crystal and a stupid production number. Give me something to look at.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the best host the Oscars ever had was Johnny Carson. You go back and watch those things, Carson hosting the Oscars was just fantastic.
Yeah.
So you never even get another one of those. All right. Well, and Forrest Whitaker won, which is good. So
I like that guy. You know, I like him more and more. He's real deep. He's funny to talk to because he's always trying to make some sort of intense moment happen for you.
Yeah.
You know? So he wants to give you some gem that only you will have.
And it does look like he could kill you with about one punch.
He'd kill you with a look.
Yeah, it just seems like one of those guys that just has a core of something inside of him. Yeah, just kill you with a pinky. All right.
You know, somebody brought up his first film, the Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and I forgot. That was his first film.
Jesus.
What a long way that guy's come.
Seriously. Well, you know, and the fact that, I mean, that he did this, he won this Academy Award when just a couple of years ago he was being reduced to trying to play Fat Albert.
Yeah.
In that hideous Fat Albert film. So, you know, it can all turn around in the blink of an eye. You know, one day you're on top of the world, the next day you're Jim Carrey and can't get anybody to rep you. No, it's true. I was hearing somebody talk about that this weekend, that Jim Carrey's, he's having difficulty finding an agent willing to rep him. So,
goodness.
You know, in that business.
He doesn't need any more money. He should retire.
No, he should retire and quit subjecting us to his so-called films. That's what he should do. Let's see. I think we have Ashley. Somebody has a question here for you. This is Laura. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
I was just wondering if you guys saw, if you picked up on it, but the whole Tobey Maguire and Kirsten Dunst moment where she kind of stepped on a line and he gave her a death stare.
Oh, really?
It's pretty comical.
Jim?
I didn't notice that.
No. It always does stun me how bad that actors are at reading teleprompters, though. I mean, it doesn't seem like they can memorize an entire 90-minute movie or whatever. They, you know, a lot of them have done theater and stage. But they ought to be able to read two lines, and they always screw it up. It's always a joke that requires some sort of comic timing, and they always F it up. Yeah. Always, constantly,
well,
every
time.
Well,
they're not comedians.
No, they're...
Jon Stewart can do it. They can't.
That's true. All right, sorry. Yeah, sorry. No help there, Laura. Sorry.
All right.
Yeah, there you go. And we've let another one down. All right. Do you get to go to an exclusive after party, or do you just get herded into the back?
No, I went to the... I dropped by that, what they call the governor's ball.
Uh-huh.
You know, because that's when you really get a chance to talk with the winners.
Well, that's
or daisies and all that.
And you want to see somebody fall, you know, down a staircase or something. I mean, that's me. If I went, that's all I'm looking for. Is I'm not looking for somebody to trip. I just want to be there for one of those TMZ moments when somebody falls into a potted plant or something. That's it. That's all I'm looking for. All right, Jim Roop, enjoy the rest of your day. We will talk to you soon, my friend.
Thank you very much.
CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop in Los Angeles.
When I was a kid, the only way that I saw movies was from the backseat of my family's car to drive me. So receiving this honor tonight tells me that it is possible for a kid from East Texas, raised in South Central L.A. and Carson, who believes in his dreams, commits himself to them with his heart, to touch them and to have them happen.
See, he does seem like an unstable guy. That's Forrest Whitaker right there. He does seem like a guy that is just one bad day away from just, you know, being up in a clock tower. Let's see. This is Terry. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello. Terry. Terry on my wayward son. No. Okay, I've got nothing. 503-733-2070. Are we breaking here?
Yeah, we might as well.
Okay.
It's about time.
Let's break. We'll come. Hey, Scotty, is Carlin at 2 or 2.30? Please to be telling me, because that'll help me figure out what we're going to be doing and when in this final hour. Really? Okay. Anytime you want. He's just sitting at home. Okay. Well, we'll come back. Tim Riley will be at the... be at the top of the hour here with the Ministry of Truth. Later on, next hour, at whatever time, at time of our choosing, apparently, Peter Carlin for the Oregonian is going to weigh in, and more like us at 3, Donna Mike at 7. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show.